Hi, I'm Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last night, the Vermont Asian, Pacific Islander, and Desi American for Black Lives group, APEDA for Black Lives, sent an open letter calling out Vermont leaders and others for silence in this state since the murders in Atlanta last week that left 8 people dead, including 6 women of Asian backgrounds. In the letter, the group writes, quote, "This week, our conversation turned inwards. It was reflective and pained by silence. Moments of silence for the deceased, the silence of our political leaders, friends, and colleagues, the silence created when there is an absence of action after a promise or tweet. We breathed in that undisturbed air and let it quiet our brown and golden bodies temporarily. But that silence has since turned into anger." Sharing the racist history of how Asian Americans have been treated and the ongoing injustices for people of color, including Asian Americans, the group calls on Vermont politicians to work on specific actions for change. Brian Shung and Steph Yu are representatives of APEDA for Black Lives, and they join us now. Welcome, Brian and Steph. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks a lot, Jane. Thanks. I'm happy to be here, and it's good to hear you too, Steph.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So, Brian or Steph, I don't know which one of you would like to start, but, you know, this is an affinity group, as you talk about it in the letter, that was created after the killing of George Floyd and in working in solidarity to make sure that Black Vermonters, Black Americans, Vermonters of color, BIPOC Vermonters, and Americans are treated fairly. And you're also now asking for leaders in Vermont, but also everybody in Vermont to think about the violence and racism directed against Asian Americans. What prompted you to write this open letter now?
Jane, we meet regularly. In fact, this group got together kind of formally after the murder of George Floyd. We organized a rally after that and recognized, like, in the sense that all ships rise with a rising tide, that we needed to stand in solidarity with Black communities, our Black brothers and sisters. And we started to gather together and think about how we could stand next to each other and with each other. And in that process, after the murders in Atlanta, and we started thinking about that and spending time with each other, reflecting our pain and the trauma of not just the current moment, but that we'd lived through our lives and generationally, it came clear to us that we needed to write this letter. We waited for a week to see what kind of response and what sort of support we would get from Vermonters, from elected officials, from the media. And when we received little to none, we decided to release the letter last evening. I believe it might be posted on the VPR website. We'd like to invite people to look at it because it not only tells our story, but also has some demands that we have around bills that are current in the Vermont legislature that we would like to have the public think about how those certain bills will make changes and difference in our community and the many communities, the BIPOC community here in Vermont. But that's kind of how it started. Steph?
Yeah, and I would just add to that. I mean, I think I sort of, speaking personally, sort of watched statements trickle in. And just to be clear, a statement about this is sort of the bare minimum, right? Like, it's the acknowledgement is the bare minimum of what we're talking about, sort of waiting for leaders to weigh in and seeing it happen with leaders from other places and just wondering at the silence. And so I think the excerpt that you read, you know, gets to it, which feels like we waited long enough and wanted to call this out.
What did that silence feel like? I mean, you talked about it in the letter, pain and then pain turning to anger. But, you know, there's a sort of an erasure that comes with silence and not being addressed, not being identified and not being, you know, elevated in this moment.
Yeah, I think that issue of invisibility, especially in Vermont, although I'd say throughout the country, too, I think that issue of invisibility of sort of just kind of being ignored in the public conversation and really feeling like, you know, this what happened in Atlanta came on the heels of this report about the increase in hate crimes against Asian Americans throughout this last year. And just really that really didn't seem like it registered with a lot of people, particularly in Vermont.
Steph, can you talk about, you address this in the letter too, the nearly 4,000 incidents of racially motivated hatred that have been directed at Asian Americans in the last year, and those are just reported incidents.
Right. Those are just reported incidents where, you know, it's not every casual mention, of which we can say happens constantly in Vermont, sort of the casual mention of terms used by our political leaders repeated, particularly in this last year of the pandemic, and sort of the uptick and just this sort of the othering and the overt racism that's come in this last year.
Brian, could you talk about that as well, the sort of invisibility, but also, you know, clearly increased hatred, which was already there, directed at Asian Americans and Asian Vermonters?
Yeah, in fact, Jane, if you don't mind, I've got a short anecdote, which I think may highlight some of this for us.
Yeah.
You know, it was about early 2017 or so. I was on I was taking my daughter on a trip to Boston. We stopped at the gas station to get gas and snacks on the way out. And on my way back to the car, someone referred to me as a dirty pig. And this was like the first time I've had lots of slurs thrown at me. I've had actually, physical things thrown at me at different times, you know, in the state. But this was the first time I was with my daughter, and it shook me to my core in a different way, as I think a lot of parents could identify with. But what really, really shook me after that was when I shared the experience with friends and family, the question I was asked was, well, how do you know that that was racism? How do you know that had to do with your race? And as a man who grew up in this country with deep brown skin, I think a lot of us have that feeling when we know when something is an act of racism. But that feeling of that questioning, that asking, that kind of perpetual, like, are you sure about this? This feeling of further othering and invisibility. We see this happening in our nation right now. We saw this happen with the reporting after the Atlanta murders. It was a bad day for some. No, that was a murder that happened to some people. And then the further question, are we sure that this is about race? This is something that happens across our nation. And in my experience of speaking with friends, colleagues, and other APEDA community members, this is a common experience that we have shared and that our parents have shared also. We are doing things now that, like, asking our parents to be careful, telling our kids safety protocols, again, about don't have your headphones and when you're walking around through the streets. These are the things that we are worried about, but we didn't hear anything from our elected leaders, and we're looking to leadership to protect us, right? That's what we look to government and leadership for. We need that leadership to be forward-thinking and not just reacting in these horrible moments. Like, how do we prevent any of these acts from happening, small to large, and how they build upon each other as well? And Jay, we appreciate VPR, but I have to call out VPR too. We waited for you all to report as well, and didn't hear response from Vermont media either. So we're looking forward to partnering and keeping on moving forward, but we're looking to no longer be invisible or thought of it as invisible, because we simply aren't.
Yeah. And if I could just
piggyback, go ahead, Steph.
If I could just add to that, I mean, one of the things that I think that we've experienced, particularly in this last year, is in the schools sort of not quite taking this as seriously as they might other racism. And I think that there's this idea that people's political beliefs, that you shouldn't wade into people's political beliefs. And because a lot of this sort of vitriol was being thrown out by our political leaders, that it was somehow tied to respecting people's political differences. And so you couldn't call it out as racism because of that. And I think that's a real problem. And it does speak to some of this work, that we talk about in terms of the legislation that the Vermont Ethnic and Social Equity Standards Working Group is working on, and some of the things that need to happen. You know, we're calling out state leaders, but we're also talking about sort of leadership all through our communities, you know, down to the school level, what is happening.
I'm speaking with Brian Chung and Steph Yu, representatives of the group Vermont APEDA for Black Lives. And Brian and Steph, I appreciate and acknowledge the call out. And you're right, VPR does need to do better, and Vermont media and others. And in fact, your letter is directed at specific leaders, but also friends and colleagues. You're, in a sense, calling out everyone, and in particular, white Vermonters, to take action and to not be silent anymore. I want to talk about that, but first let's talk about the very specific things that you mentioned that you'd like to see action on from the legislature and from elected leaders. There are some very specific things that you would like to see done pretty immediately. Steph, do you want to go through a few of them?
Right. So what we're asking for in the letter is, first, this, you know, to publicly denounce the attacks. Like we say, I think that, that we were waiting for these statements and that, again, it's the bare minimum in a case like this. But it's also thinking through what it means to be a hate crime and taking that piece seriously. You know, that the default assumption, and I don't think there was any question in the PETA community that this was racially motivated. It doesn't matter if it's 100% racially motivated or 50% racially motivated, some women, some other, you know, misogyny, some other pieces. But the point is, it was racially motivated. And so what are the standards for establishing a hate crime? And that those pieces have to be fully explored when these things happen. I think there's a tendency to see that as a very high bar and to not pursue those investigations when, in fact, everyone in the community knows that this is a hate crime. And if this isn't a hate crime, then what is?
So can I ask you about that? Yeah. When you say, so in the letter, you say when the victim of crime is a person of color, assume from the start that it is a hate crime until a full and thorough investigation proves otherwise. So do you mean specifically to law enforcement and to the way a crime is prosecuted that it should be considered a hate crime within statute from the beginning? Or do you mean that more sort of broadly and philosophically? Because there are different ways to approach that assumption, you know, as a legal one or just as a working philosophical assumption, sort of.
All of the above. I mean, I think that it's both. I think that that whenever you can't separate race in this country from any of these crimes, all of that context, that's the world we live in. And so I think that there should be an assumption that race was involved.
Brian,
I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, when we started looking into it, the benefits that are available to a victim of a hate crime only get triggered after such such a high bar that needs to be followed. What I hear Steph saying, what we're thinking about more along the lines is, let's assume that bias is involved because none of us live in this world, in this country, without being influenced by bias. When a person of color is involved, let's begin with the assumption that bias was involved and move from that point instead of having to make the case through posts on social media, through interviews, through all these different factors that potentially bias was involved. We'd like to start a different sort of process to think about it from a different sort of view.
Steph, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think this is mentioned in the letter too, that there's this perception that somehow white people are better able to be neutral rather than people of color in these situations, and that feels wrong in a lot of ways.
You also want an executive order issued immediately that calls on every agency, department, university, and employer to study and address equitable representation and equal pay on their boards, commissions, and positions of leadership. What do you think that will happen, Steph?
We're always hopeful. I think that part of the point we're trying to make here is that it's sort of across everything, this needs to be looked at. And we do, you know, we have a racial equity director that is charged with doing some of this work. That work needs to be supported. We have this coalition that's charged with thinking about some of the school stuff. All that work needs to be supported. But it's a big job. And I think a lot of this, and I think part of this is, you know, part of the problem here is that you can see that there aren't enough leaders of color. There aren't enough a PETA representation throughout these structures, or this wouldn't have happened, or this silence wouldn't have happened.
And then there are also specific pieces of legislation that you would like legislators to publicly support immediately, I mean, including a task force to study and develop reparations for the institution of chattel slavery, an act relating to hate-motivated crimes and misconduct, an act amending the prohibitions against discrimination, and several others. And we will post this letter. Our webpage is not quite up yet as we're live here in the noon hour, but it will be soon. And you can find the letter there, or you can find it elsewhere. You know, we will certainly help to distribute this letter that you've written. As I mentioned, you call out all white Vermonters as playing a role in addressing racism and disparities. And you write to, as I said, specific leaders, but also friends and colleagues, which applies to pretty much all of us. What is it that you would like to see white Vermonters be doing right now in solidarity and support and in making change, and also in making sure that Asian Vermonters, Vermonters of Asian background, are supported and cared for in this moment?
Jane, I want to be really clear too, is that like part of our thought as this group is that we are looking to stand in solidarity in a BIPOC community. So, and also in that, you know, in that we've called out these folks here, or called in, hopefully called in some of these folks here, we're speaking to Vermonters across the board, and also, you know, holding two things at true all at the same time, and in particularly our white friends, colleagues, and elected leadership as well. I think things are going to happen at your work all the time are thinking about how much, like, how are BIPOC voices being uplifted at your workplace? How are we making decisions and applying an equity lens to those decisions? How are we thinking about the ways that we interact with our neighbors, the ways that we interact with students, the ways that we kind of hold leadership accountable at all times, particularly if you stand sit from a standpoint where you have some aspects of privilege in your life? How are you holding your leadership accountable in ways that maybe somebody else might not have the agency to do so? We're looking for a shift here in the state. And I think what's great about the state that we live in is that we are nimble enough, that we know our neighbors, that these things are not like unachievable. These are not unachievable actions that can happen, but small actions that happen within your family, in your neighborhood, in your schools, at your workplace, build together to create something different, just in the same way that small acts of bias, small moments of cruelty build together as well to lead towards acts of violence.
Steph?
Oh, I think that was well said. I don't have anything to add to that.
Well, as I said, we will post your letter and we'll continue this conversation. Brian Shung and Steph Yu are representatives of the group Vermont APIDA, that's Asian Pacific Islander and Desi Americans for Black Lives. Thank you both very much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Jane. Can I leave with one thought, please?
Of course.
I just want to also fully recognize that the work that we are doing now is impossible without the work that came before us, particularly coming from the Black community here in Vermont, that APIDA for Black Lives, my voice, Steph's voice, those of our friends and colleagues, do not cut through without the heavy lifting that happened amongst Black communities, people who supported Black activists, and young people in our state.
Absolutely.
Noted and appreciated. Brian Shung and Steph Yu, thank you both very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Jane.